This is Take Care, a conversation on health and wellness produced by WRVO Public Media. I'm Catherine Loper.
And I'm Jason Smith.
How does this year's flu season compare to others over time?
Joining us now for some historical perspective is Dr. Howard Markell, a physician and the director of the Center for the History of Medicine at the University of Michigan. Dr. Markell is also a New York Times bestselling author. Dr. Markell, thank you very much for joining us today.
Well, thank you for having me.
Well, there's been a lot of talk about this year's flu season being worse than previous years. We've heard the terms outbreak and epidemic a lot. What is the difference between an outbreak and an epidemic, and could either of those terms be used to describe this flu season?
So an outbreak is really a generic kind of a word. It doesn't have a real public health definition attached to it. It simply means there's a case or a number of cases of a particular contagious disease in a particular area at that time. An epidemic is having more episodes of that disease than you expect in a normal year. So, for example, if there was one case of bubonic plague in Syracuse, that would be considered an epidemic of bubonic plague, not an outbreak, because you don't expect any cases of bubonic plague. With influenza, on the other hand, there are certain numbers of flu cases that are expected during the winter months because for some reason influenza likes the cold weather. And once it goes above that number, it's considered to be an epidemic in a particular area. Now, if that epidemic spreads to many areas or many lands, it becomes a pandemic, which means it's all over. Pan is everywhere. So those are the way those words are used. Sadly, for this epidemiologist and this historian, they're sometimes used interchangeably, but they're not truly interchangeable.
Do you have any indication at this point as to whether or not this year's flu season would be considered an epidemic?
Well, it is in a way because we're seeing more cases of H3N2 strain than we have predicted and that we have seen in the past. And it did spread throughout the United States quite quickly. It wasn't a slow wave like coming from the East Coast and going west. It just seems to be everywhere. And that makes perfect sense given how we travel everywhere by plane, car, boat, and what have you. It's surprising that we don't have the spread of flu in any given winter. We are seeing more cases of that than we expected, but it looks like the peak of the curve is now pointing downward. You know, there's something called an epidemiological or epidemic curve, and it's sort of a bell curve, you know, as the cases are rising and it goes to a peak and then it starts to fall. And it looks like that's what's happening right now.
When you look at this flu season, how does it compare to flu seasons in, let's say, the past 20 or so years?
Well, I would say in the past 10 or 20 years, it is slightly worse, certainly worse than last year. We don't have all the numbers of deaths that are caused by this year's flu, and that's a big measure. We do know there's been about 128 pediatric deaths thus far, and that's a little higher than we would like. Well, anything over one is higher than we would like. Now, seasonal flu happens every winter season. And we generally see anywhere from 25 to 30,000 to 50,000 deaths in America every year from this winter seasonal flu. They tend to be most clustered among the elderly and among the very young, both of whom have immunological issues, but for different reasons that make them more susceptible to the deadly effects of influenza.
You mentioned somewhere in the average of 30 to 50,000 deaths a year. I would assume that the prevalence of the flu vaccine has really cut down the number of deaths. So when you look back through the history of influenza, what are some of the worst epidemics or pandemics of the flu that we've seen throughout history?
I can't emphasize enough how important it is to have a flu vaccine every year. Even this year, where we don't have H3N2 protected as much in that flu strain, it still covers you against a lot of strains of flu and is worth taking. In terms of the worst flu pandemic, well, you know, the great mother of all pandemics is the 1918 to 1919 influenza outbreak, which spread around the world. And not only were there an enormous amount of cases, it was a particularly deadly strain that most human beings living at that time did not have a good immunological defense to. So in America alone of that year, there are anywhere from 500,000 to 650,000 deaths from flu. About 1 to 2% of all cases of flu ended up in death. That is huge. The traditional case fatality rate is not 1 to 2%. It tends to be 0.01 or less percent. So it was a very, very deadly influenza strain that year. We had another bad influenza pandemic in 1957, but nowhere near as bad as 1918, and another one in 1968. You sound too young to remember, but it was called the Hong Kong flu. We like to blame particular areas for influenza, but we don't really know exactly where each strain comes from year to year.
More recently, we've had, you know, those outbreaks of bird flu or swine flu. And when you look at how vaccines have helped cut down the numbers of deaths, each year we seem to have, especially this year, the CDC has said that the vaccine wasn't as effective in dealing with this year's strains of flu. Why is it that some years vaccines work better than others? Is it a variation in the strain of flu for that particular year?
Well, it is. And the flu vaccine is developed 6 or more months before flu actually strikes in the United States. The world's leading flu experts get together in advance. They look at what flu strains are floating around in places like Australia or South America below the equator, and they make their best guesstimate that these strains will be prevalent in the winter in places like North America or Europe, Western Europe, and what have you. And then it takes up to 6 or more months to make all these allotments of flu vaccine. We still use, for the most part, a pretty old method of making flu vaccine using chicken eggs, and you literally have to grow the vaccine and purify it and make, you know, millions of doses. So that takes time. And this year, the prediction was not nearly as accurate as it has been in the past. That does happen. We're getting better about these predictions, to be sure, and we're also developing faster methods of making flu vaccines so that decision can be made not 6 months, but hopefully 5, 4, 3, and 2 months down the road. And that's where a lot of the technology is going.
Elsewhere in our show, we've talked with a doctor that is leading a trial on a universal flu vaccine. Have you heard anything about that? And what are your thoughts on the idea of a universal flu vaccine?
Well, this has been the holy grail for some time. We're all hopeful that that will happen. You know, it's hard to have every single strain in a vaccine because it increases the volume of fluid you have to put into somebody's muscle, their arm, and that hurts a little bit. But that is being worked on, and my hope is that will be the case. Between a universal vaccine and better, quicker methods of making flu vaccine, which have been going on for quite some time, I'm confident that we will perfect the system.
Do you still see some obstacles in the future for preventing outbreaks and epidemics, and are they similar to obstacles that we've seen in the past?
There are some new obstacles. Flu travels very quickly. It always has. You know, in 1918, it traveled pretty quickly. It travels faster now, though, because it can travel by jet plane. Millions of people travel from one place to another in under 24 hours every day. And so the spread of a flu infection can happen rather quickly. On the flip side, communication between different countries and different laboratories has never been faster. And so we can jump on the flu epidemics as they arise much more quickly. One of the bigger obstacles I see as a pediatrician, however, is people who don't like or don't trust vaccines. Now, be sure, no vaccine is perfect. There are sometimes side effects to vaccines, but the risk of taking a proven safe vaccine are infinitesimal to the risk of getting the disease that vaccine is preventing against. So my best advice as a physician and as a historian is to be immunized, not just for influenza, but for all the childhood infections, for pneumonia, for hepatitis. These have been tested at an incredible rate, and they are remarkably safe things. And if you asked me, what are the top 10 greatest hits in the history of medicine? I would say at least 9 out of 10 are vaccines. People who look into this have figured out that 30 to 50 million deaths have been prevented over the last century because of the arsenal of vaccines that we have.
What do you think is the state of our public health system? Do you think it is ready for that next big epidemic, whatever it may be, whether it's flu or another disease?
Well, they're doing the best they can. You know, various public health officers at the municipal, state, and federal levels in the United States are remarkably talented, professional, and dedicated people. But budgets have been cut on a ridiculous level to these various public health agencies, and they continue to be. And that, frankly, is more than silly. It's downright dangerous. We pay for police departments, fire department, whether we use it or not, because when a crisis comes up, we want that covered very quickly. We don't say, well, there hasn't been a fire here for 6 months, so let's cut the budget. But we do precisely that with public health agencies. Well, we haven't had that much TB, so we'll cut that program. We haven't had diphtheria, so we'll cut that program. That's precisely when an infectious disease will come back and will bite us in the part of anatomy you wish to choose. But we need to prevent and think about infectious diseases 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, because we know now, take a look at Ebola a few years ago, or SARS, or bird flu, an outbreak anywhere can easily go everywhere. And that means we need to be on guard.
Dr. Markell, thank you very much for your time today.
Thanks so much for having me.